This is Cade Massey, practice professor at the Wharton School. On this week's Wharton Moneyball Highlight Show, we talk with our very own Audie Weiner, calling in from Florida and spring training in Jupiter. Took in a couple games, sat with some execs. We take the chance to talk about what's going on down there and the latest on the world of analytics in baseball. This is Cade Massey, Eric Bradlow, and Audie Weiner.
From the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, this is Wharton Moneyball on Business Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to Wharton Moneyball. Welcome to Sports Analytics here on SiriusXM. This is Cade Massey hosting this week with two of my three fellow co-hosts, Eric Bradlow and Audie Weiner, are both here. Shane Jensen out doing Shane Jensen things this week. He'll be back. Some combination of us are here almost every week of the year, have been for 10 years. We're going to call this the first show of the next 10 years. Last week, we ran a special reviewing, reflecting on the last 10 years, and this week we'll start the next 10. Appreciate y'all being with us. So, Eric, Audie, let's go with Audie first. Odd from Florida. It's Audie, man, right now in the Northeast, it's exactly what you think the March is going to be like and what you're done with and tired of, and you think it's warm outside and it's not warm. And then you talk to your friends down in the South or visiting the South like you, and it makes us mad. But all the same, let's hear how it is. Tell us what's going on down there. You took in a little baseball yesterday?
I sure did take in a bit of baseball yesterday. I was in the part of Florida that I'm in is the southern eastern part, where, if I remember as a kid, and Eric, you'll correct me, all the teams played down here. We're down to only five teams that are playing in the southern southeastern part of Florida. You have in Jupiter, which is where I was, which is north of Palm Beach. You have the Marlins and the Cardinals. You have in Port St. Lucie, the Mets, and you have the Washington Nationals sharing a stadium with the Houston Astros in West Palm Beach. That's it. Five teams. Now, it works out for me because for many years we had Penn grads at the Nationals and Mets. We still do. But we also have an incredible locus of Penn grads at the Marlins. So I was able to go to the Marlins Stadium in Jupiter and hang out with our former students. And it was just a lot of fun to watch the Marlins, who had brought their full lineup. Their basically opening day lineup we're playing.
Before we talk about baseball players, give us the lineup of the at least some of the Wharton alums who are involved
and what their roles are.
And the roles are, so of course, Sam Mondry-Cohen, who's probably my first sports analytics student. He has a great story, which has been all over about. In fact, it was in some sense he's the impetus for me to really get in this. He walked into my office about 15 years ago and said, "I'd like to learn baseball analytics with you." And I said, "Well, what do you know about statistics?" And he said, "Nothing." And I said, "Well, go back around and go take a class in statistics." And he signed up for my class. And towards the end of that class, he started having a weekly office hour with me, just the two of us. And then I had the regular office hour right after that. And that became an office hour that other students were part of later on. And they did that with me. And then it became a seminar. And then, you know, Wasabi kind of popped out. So it's, in some sense, you go back to Sam Mondry-Cohen, and that's where it begins. He was an assistant general manager at the Nationals when they won the World Series. And now he's a vice president of scouting and evaluation for the Miami Marlins. So I met with Sam initially. But our other students are there who have been there longer. Jennifer Brand, she was a part of our she was a softball player at Penn and part of my seminar and Wharton Moneyball Academy TA. She is traveling with the team. She does statistics to prepare for every game. She's in the clubhouse. She works with the players. I talked to her. She shags fly balls with the team before the game to establish credibility.
I think I would write that in my contract. If I worked for a major league team, I would have the right to shag fly balls. There's very little I enjoy more than shagging fly balls.
I agree. That's a great activity. I will say I've heard this from some of my other students who were with teams that it helps to establish a little credibility with the players and coaches that you can play a little. Nobody right. expects you to be, you know, world class or even nearly at their level. But the idea that you can get out there and throw the ball relatively hard and catch a fly ball matters to them in some way that we can, you know, it's a managerial thing you could probably enlighten us on. So Jennifer was there.
Let me give an example of that. One of the first NFL games I attended for a team that it was, well, it doesn't matter much. It was the Redskins. but I was on the sideline before the game. This was many years ago. And a ball came my way just in the pregame stuff. And I just picked it up and threw it back. But the guy I was with paid a lot of attention to how I threw the ball. I was surprised that he cared at all. He's like, he really watched how I threw that ball.
It's interesting because Robbie Knopf is another, he graduated from Penn in 2017. He's a senior analyst with the Marlins. And he said on a scale of 1 to 10, they asked him in an interview, how well can he play baseball? And he said, is there anything lower than 1? So he represents completely the other side of the kind of athleticism baseball side, knows the game inside and out, but not as a player. So both of them were there. They had to go, of course, work. They have projects and stuff to do. So I sat with them for a while. But what was really great was that Sam came out. We watched the game together. Also, one of the owners of the Marlins was there, David Ott, who's a longtime, he was a track and field star at Penn, and his wife, are big contributors to the athletic department. And he's really interested in being a part of the active ownership at the Marlins. And he watched the entire game with me down by with some other scouts who were in the scouting section.
Real quickly on that, what do you know and what can you tell us about how ownership works in Major League Baseball right now? So this is a growing issue across sports, this chance for outside investors to get in. Historically in North American sports, it was even in some sports prohibited. And increasingly they're allowing people to come in as passive investors, small owners. Different leagues have different rules about this. What's the story right now in baseball? To the extent that you know, at the very least, what is Ott's role with the Marlins? What level of ownership? What role is he playing there as an owner?
Well, I don't believe he's like a managing partner, so he's not at the level of making the decisions. And I don't know how it actually works there, so I shouldn't say anything with any authority because I essentially have no understanding. But he's there. He's there for a few weeks. He sits around. He's in the dugout. He's in the back of the stadium talking to people. So in some level, he probably has influence. I know that he talks to Sam regularly, and they discuss what's going on and what they're thinking about. I had a great time talking to him for at least an hour before the game, just talking about analytics, what we're doing at Wasabi, what the Marlins are doing, what the big questions in baseball. He was just picking my brain. He's a very accomplished business person, used analytics and his success. And I think that's what's great. I think the organization structure at the Marlins is excellent. So that's something that's terrific.
Do you get some sense about how impactful or the kinds of decisions? Because as you said, you've put a lot of students at the Marlins. Do you get the sense that it's, well, clearly there's, let's assume, some on-field stuff. Let's assume it's got some effect on scouting, but let's just go through the list. On-field, scouting, training, player contracts, the business side. Do you get a sense that analytics is in all of those?
Okay, so my recollection from the Marlins before Sam got there was it was a very small shop in terms of analytics. They had, Robbie's been there. Jennifer was hired in, I think, 2021. But if you had to rank baseball teams from 1 to 30, I don't know exactly where I put the Marlins in terms of the size, which are relatively public pieces of information. Definitely bottom, certainly bottom quartile, maybe even bottom quintile. So not certainly not one of the big teams in terms of their investments, which of course are the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Rays, which is a small market team. They spend an incredible number on amount of money on analytics. The Cleveland Indians are not the Indians, the Guardians now. So that's the top tier, and the Marlins have always been on the bottom, and they're really trying to change that. So I think they're budgeting. One of the things I think that Sam's going to be working on is really growing their analytics at all aspects of the game. One of the things that Jennifer told me she does during the game is watching their pitchers to make sure they don't have tells, which I know this is going on because it's happened in playoff games. So you got to take countermeasures. You got to look for tells in your own pitchers to make sure they're not doing it.
Adi, do you think there's a time where a real live AI engine could actually watch the pitcher, come up with a prediction of what pitch they're going to throw and see how highly predictive it is? Because if an AI engine could assess a tell, then, I'm just saying, to me, that seems like a very easy application, actually, of a supervised learning problem where you know what the pitches are. You could see the pitcher's grip or the windup or the body angle or something. It seems like this is actually something that you could do using just modern data science.
I would agree. I think that's a great potential possibility. We just look at the video, extract features or have the machine,
Right.
the AI extract features, correlate them with what pitches it's thrown, and see what shows up. I mean, this is great, great application. Right now, they're doing it the old-fashioned way. You're just watching them as they do it.
Let me push you on sample size needed for some. What's your intuition for sample size needed for something that is not something you can borrow strength for across pitchers, because we're looking for very idiosyncratic styles, techniques, and tells. So you're going to have reps on a guy. You probably need real game reps on a guy. How many of those do you need for a model like that, which is going to use, you know, zillions of features to reliably predict something like that?
I may just give an opinion first. I think you can borrow some strength across players because there may be some common patterns. I think also you'd have to do some feature engineering, which means you probably can't jam in a million features, because in theory you could measure a million features, but you probably can't use them all. But yeah, my guess would be, you know, if someone throws 100 pitches, maybe you could watch their warm up. Maybe you could watch other things in the point of a season. Could you see a pitcher throw a couple thousand pitches, which might allow you to do so something? I think that's possible, but that's my opinion. But I'd love Adi's. You'd have to do dimension reduction first.
Before you go, let me respond to that real quick, because it feels, again, I'm going to play, my instinct goes this way, but let me also just play the devil's advocate. When someone's, I'm guessing, I've never sat and tried to figure out tells on a pitcher, but I'm guessing that you're considering an almost infinite number of dimensions when you're trying to figure out tells. And so I feel like it's a bad space to need to do dimension reduction, this feature engineering, and only work with a few sets of inputs, precisely because you're looking for anything that might tell.
Could be. I you know, could be. It could also be, by the way, this is also something you've talked about in football and other sports, Cade. It could be this is the kind of thing where you combine automated feature with scouting information. So maybe there's not enough information in the automated extracted features, but if I combine that with Jennifer sitting there, who's also scoring this, then all of a sudden, maybe I have something.
Yeah. Right.
It's a really tough problem, and because there are so many possible features. See, I would imagine you'd have to get some sort of feature reduction, dimensionality reduction,
that's
history.
Said, yeah.
These are the kinds of things that people have tipped off, and this is the ways they've done it. But being an effect size guy, right, Eric, the key idea is you're looking for a feature that's a tell that's a nearly 100% shot, right? So you're looking for things that have a real signal. Something that's slightly predictive is not going to be useful. It's got to be something that's a total tip-off. You know, when you look straight at third base, when there's a runner on first, or look at whatever it is, and then you turn your head, these are the kinds of tells that have been destructive to pitchers, and those are the things you want to catch. If it's not 100%, it's not really a tell, right?
But aren't you implying that because tells are such big effects, when they exist, they'll be much easier to detect? In sports analytics, we're so often looking for these little bitty edges. And in this case, if you identify it, it's a big edge. And so therefore, you don't need as much power to find it.
You have a lot of power, but you don't need much data.
Effective power. Right. Super interesting. Related question. How sophisticated are models in predicting pitches, which should be, it's more like a game state plus individual pitcher, maybe batter characteristics? I would think you could build a decent model for that. Is that?
Well, I know this is a subject of research. I know that we at Wasabi did a fellows project with the team exactly on this topic, predictability of pitchers. And there's a lot of questions related to how do you use forecastability, predictability, entropy of the pitcher to maybe become a better pitcher. And that's something that there certainly are proprietary models out there that teams use. And that's really what teams who have a lot of staff will work on, this kind of these kind of modelings. Teams that don't have it are really just going day to day. They're just sort of preparing for the game. One of the things I did get from the Marlins was it's the staff that tells the outfielders where to stand. And I knew that's the case at teams, but she also said that there's Jennifer that they're good at it, and the professionals know where to stand, and they follow. They're out there in the position that they know what to do, and they know per player where to be. And this has been a huge. I mean, as anyone who's watched baseball knows, and this although they've changed the rules of the shift. I mean, there was a shot up the middle that was at 105 miles an hour, right to the second baseman.
You're right.
Standing on second base, and for me as an old baseball guy, I mean, what is this?
That's
That's a
a
hit,
hit.
right?
That's got to be a hit. You know
And
what?
nope, that's not a hit.
Yeah,
Yeah, so
Kate,
this is what you see.
something you said also struck a thought to me, which is the framework you've laid out also gives you stuff about the value of information. And what I mean by that is, let's imagine I could just use batter, pitcher, easily observable characteristics to predict the pitch. Now, you've asked an interesting question. Let's suppose I build this AI engine. What's the value of that additional information above just situational features and batter pitcher characteristics? What's the value of the scouting data above it? Maybe I can just predict, curveball, slider, fastball, whatever, as a function of observables. Like, this is the pitcher's best pitches. This is the weakness of the batter. This is what happens on a 3-1 count. So this is all, I think what you're also saying is, before one invests in data, this is what we tell our businesses all the time, what's the value of that information in improving the prediction above, I'll call it, easily observable things? And it's not that obvious that you couldn't build a good predictive model without this million feature AI engine or even potentially a scout.
Super interesting. I love it when the guy who heads up analytics at Wharton plays the AI skeptical card or the AI unnecessary card. There's a time and place for it, and there's a time and place to be skeptical of it being oversold. Eric just talked about a good way of thinking about its potential use.
So the
Border, we only have a few more minutes here. Give us some highlights or some favorite moments from
so
Money.
so one of the favorite moments was, of course, since we were, the Marlins shared their stadium with the Cardinals, even though the Cardinals weren't playing. I had the opportunity to watch a good hour of the game with an old friend of mine, a former Red Sox GM, Chaim Bloom, who came down to the field and watched the game with us. Just walked out of a meeting. He's now the special advisor to the Cardinals, and he was wonderful sharing what he's doing. Not the kind of thing I can talk about on the radio, but it's just a lot of fun. And just watching the game, there was a Pittsburgh Pirates scout standing, sitting a few rows behind us. And just watching the game with these absolute, immersive experts, statisticians, leaders, and it just was just great fun to just sit there and be part of that. So, an
So
experience.
I understand I understand the fun part of it for sure. Anything in particular that they observed or they thought about, or you came away thinking differently after having sat with essentially a GM and a scout watching this spring ball?
Well, one of the things that we talked about, we sort of openly, was what is the future for baseball rules and what are the big issues and concerns is baseball having going forward? And they all hit repeatedly on the same point. The game's got to get more fun to watch for the new crowd. And they kept talking about ideas to make the game more quicker, which is, I think they made amazing strides last year with the pitch clock. But also to get fewer strikeouts and more balls in play. And I heard a strange idea that I of course am repulsed by being a conservative when it comes to the state of baseball, which is a bigger ball. And I'm like, what?
Oh my goodness.
Bigger ball? I was thinking that. And of course, one of the things we talked about is speed. The overall success rate in stolen bases last year was extremely high. I think it was around 80%. That's primarily because of the larger bases. We think that those 3 inches in total don't matter. They do. And also, of course, the pickoff move
Oh, yeah.
being limited to only two.
What's your relative attribution to the pickoff move versus the size of the base? I just intuitively gave it all to the pickoff, not to the size of the base. I'm wrong about that, huh?
My intuitive attribution is 50-50. Think about how many stolen bases get decided. The ones that are outs are often very close. So, those 3 inches, that's not nothing. But I think I do think, obviously, the pickoff,
Both
you're
ways.
looking at me like you're crazy, that it's
Well,
got to be the pickoff.
I'm just thinking about it. I'm thinking of it as, it's 6 inches, 3 inches, 3 inches. But remember, it's 90 feet between the bases. So that's 1,080 inches. And so I'm thinking it's like one half of 1% of the total distance, essentially, that's been changed. That I would be surprised if that part has that large an effect when you look at it that way.
Oh, no, I'll give you another. What is the margin of error? What is the distance? When you're safe, by how much are you safe? And when you're out, by how much are you out? That's the thing to compare your 6 inches to. Is it, and I think it's less. So if you're out by a
That's
foot, then
fair. Probably most players that are out by, let's call it, 2 feet or less. So now you've gained 6 inches out of 2 feet. It's not the first 88 feet don't matter. Anybody can get the first
No.
88 feet. It's the last two. That's a good day.
That's
I stand corrected. Good point.
And so that was fascinating. And one of the things that keeps coming up, I think, is that the historically Sterling bases, they just don't add that much one way or the other. And one of the things that Chaim mentioned is that because the run environment is so oriented towards home runs and strikeouts, getting a runner from first to second doesn't have the value that it used to have, because there used to be singles that happened to drive you in. And there's more of an incremental sport where
Home run's going to
you
drive you in whether you're on
drive
first
you
or
in.
second.
That was exactly what Chaim's point. And I think that this is something that is going to be worked on, because survey after survey says that one of the most exciting events in baseball is a stolen base. You want to see more of it. Whether it matters to the output or not, it's just plain fun. And at the end of the day, baseball, like every other sport, is entertainment.
Actually, just for 10 seconds, let me just add as a marketing professional, I'll put on my hat, which Adi just brought up. I wonder how much survey-based research or talking to the customer, when you want to know what product to sell, ask the customer sometimes. I wonder if they've asked people, what's actually that exciting for you about baseball? Is it the stolen bases? Is it this? Is it that? So why not engineer something towards something having to do with insights drawn from the customer? That's all.
I want more action on the bases. I want more plays, throws to third as a runner tries to make it in there from whatever source. All right, guys, that has been our show for the week for the whole crew here. Eric Bradlow and Adi Weiner, who've been with me from the start this week. Shane Jensen in absentia. He'll be back. Matty Datz, the boss man, along for the ride. Dion Simpkins doing all of the work to make this thing happen. Many thanks to Matty and Dion and to Kelly, the intern. Really appreciate the work and the help. Appreciate you guys listening. Come back and join us next time. Between now and then, enjoy your sports.